It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to WrestleWolf. I'm your host, Damian Gibson. Today, we're going to be breaking down Full Gear 2022. Let's get into it. Hello, wrestling fans, and welcome to WrestleWolf. We're just going to break down Full Gear. Apologize for no Dynamite Rampage, but been having some very small health issues that have been getting in the way of recording, and then also neighbors that just continue to renovate at just really weird times. Anyway. I'm going to try and slip in a quick review of Full Gear while there's no noise happening. So, let's get into it. My brief sort of overview of the pay-per-view is that I feel like AEW is back. I really enjoyed almost every single match on this card. It felt self-assured, which... AEW always had that kind of feeling in the booking, and it disappeared. I feel like the CM Punk issues took away from that. Whether it was a self-assuredness from AEW or whether it was the confidence that the fans had in AEW was rocked a little bit, I'm not sure, but it's probably a little bit of both. But this was a very self-assured, well-executed wrestling pay-per-view. Really, I mean, almost every match had a "This is awesome" chant. The crowd was hot. New Jersey was a great place to have this pay-per-view. A lot of people on Reddit complaining about AEW sort of like tiring out the same markets, but I mean, when they react like they did last night, I can see why Tony Khan keeps going back to the well. Well, let's just start from the beginning, because there's a lot that I want to talk about, and I suppose we'll just go through it as we go through each match. We started off with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus in a cage. Luchasaurus was all over Jungle Boy for the first half of this match. I'm not sure whether anyone else got the feeling that this was a little awkward. Christian nicked the keys to the cage off the referee in a pickpocket style that I liked very much, but then kind of got busted trying to break into the cage, which is, of course he would. But the awkwardness I'm talking about is that I suppose growing up watching WWE, once you leave the cage, you win, which hasn't always been the case with cage matches. So Luchasaurus came out, Jungle Boy came out of the cage, and I think a lot of people were like, oh, it's the end of the match, even though the rules in AEW haven't necessarily been that for the last 3.5 years that it's been running. I just think the commentators could have restated that a little bit, because you do need to take into consideration that the vast majority of people have grown up on a diet of WWE, and you need to explain the stipulations if they're different. From this point, Luchasaurus, well, Christian was ejected from the area, which allowed for the clean finish eventually. Luchasaurus is using a whole bunch of tools to try and beat the crap out of Jungle Boy, and it's no DQ, so that's allowed. From this point, though, Jungle Boy has his comeback. He hits a pile driver. We got some "this is awesome" chants, and a flying elbow off the top off the cage was a highlight. That led to a snare trap and the win for Jungle Boy. The crowd popped really hard for this. And what I did like as a follow up, it cut to the desk, and we got a brief minute or so of Taz, JR, and Excalibur talking about what's next for Jungle Boy. I really like this. You know, I feel like this is something that AEW absolutely should be doing 100% more of. Just sort of like, well, you know, this could happen. Jungle Boy could maybe move on from the Luchasaurus feud and start going for belts. But we, you know, time will tell. I like that. I like that foreshadowing of like, look, we haven't necessarily decided yet. Either one of these two things could happen. So, you know, tune in on Wednesday to find out. I think that's really good. Next up, we had the return of the Elite. This match, I mean, I have so many notes from this match. It essentially was, it's a five-star match. Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus, we'd probably give 4.5 out of 5. Death Triangle versus the Elite is 5. And I think that's the first match I've given a five-star rating to. Death Triangle are our first. Everyone's always pretty happy to see them, even though I still don't quite understand why these three guys are a team. But anyway, they are. And then the lights go black. Ticking clock, lyrics from Wayward Son by Kansas on the screen. Most people aren't as old as me, so I had no idea that's what that was. Lights come back on and Wayward Son by Kansas play. And it's so amazing. Like, and this is why I don't think you can ever discount that AEW are doing things like are doing some long-term booking. On BTE, maybe a year ago, Matt Jackson talked about wanting to come out to Wayward Son by Kansas. That'd be their next song. And so they're obviously kicking things around. You know, I'm not necessarily saying that they had already decided that they were going to do this 12 months ago and CM Punk's at work and all that kind of thing. But I just, it was a real insight into me, a real insight into the Bucks and their thought process. And obviously they're huge creative forces in AEW about, how long they're thinking about things before they're implemented. And I just, you know, we still haven't heard any announcements about CM Punk either. So I'd just be interested to see what happens in that space. But this was big time. It's not about CM Punk. There were some "fuck CM Punk" chants when the Elite came to the ring. Nick Jackson did the same wave as CM Punk did during the pipe bomb. So there's little things like that that make me think, you know, they're not bleeping that stuff out. There's references to CM Punk. I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens. But anyway, this was all about the Elite. They had a fantastic match. Don Callis back on comms. And this was the moment AEW felt like it was back. You know, I'm sort of reading on Squared Circle and in Reddit that, you know, it never went away. It's pretty funny how people completely change their opinions, you know, after one pay-per-view. You know, 3 weeks ago we were talking about the end of AEW. I have been critical of the booking over the last 3 months. Absolutely. And there's still, I think there's still some things that need to be fixed up in the storytelling on this pay-per-view, but overall, it was a reset. It was a reset that needed to happen, and it was fantastic. We start with Pac and Kenny, who go move for move, and then we get Nick and Ray, and then we get Matt and Penta. Some amazing chain wrestling that led to a huge pop and AEW chance, and it genuinely really reinforced how much the Elite are important to AEW, or not just important. I mean, they are the middle letter in AEW, so it makes a huge difference when they're back. Matt Jackson then dove through Matt's legs to hit a corkscrew on Penta, and then that's when he did the Punk Wave. Pac appeared to get his nose broken from a super kick, so it was all happening. JR still comes across as embarrassed by the product, and if that's the case, he just, I mean, I know he was only on half the pay-per-view here. I know he's on Rampage now, so we're slowly sort of putting him out to pasture, but it's got to happen sooner rather than later, because you're a young fledgling company and you need people who are proud of the product at all times to put it over. And I think, unfortunately, and with JR especially, a little bit Tony, even though Tony's an executive producer of some description or a creative director or something, and Taz is also starting to fall into a little bit as well. There's guys who have been there, who've been in the industry for a long time, who don't seem to be 100% sold on the product, and it's coming across on comms. To be fair to them, I'm in Australia, so we get a lot of, because it's on Fight TV, we get the commentary that happens during the ad breaks, and that's probably where a lot of this is happening. But even still, if you don't believe in the product, if these guys don't believe in the product and they don't want to be there, then, you know, like, just let Excalibur do it and get Chris Jericho on commentary, or get Ricky Starks on commentary, or, you know, anyone who wants to be there and actually sell the product. Because, I mean, this was probably the best match technique-wise in ring for a year. It was such a huge return. Everybody's losing their mind, and you've got JR just sitting there going, meh, meh. It just really takes me out of it. Nick hits a backward leg flip on Penta off the top rope, so like essentially a German suplex off the top rope onto the rest of the guys in the match. Kenny gets a two count on Pac at this point. Pac hits a German suplex to get out of a V trigger. There's triple tombstone, some amazing offense. So much happening, and then Pac hits a black arrow on Kenny, and he kicks out. Nick saves him with a knee at that point, and then that's when Pac and the hammer come in, and he throws the hammer to Ray. Ray throws it back to him. There's some more offense. Kenny's about to hit the one winged angel, and then Pac throws Ray the hammer. Ray uses the hammer to knock Kenny out, and Death Triangle retain. The announcement almost immediately was that there would be a seven match series between these two for the Trios Championship, which is some ingenious booking, because we get to see this match over and over again. We get to have a long feud over an extended period of time, which will most likely end up with the Elite winning the Trios belt, but it doesn't completely bury Death Triangle either. So I really like that. This match was amazing. Everything about it was great. And we're off to the races with this pay-per-view. Next up, Jade Cargill versus Nyla Rose for the TBS title. I like the baddies dollar bill fans that they had. It's a little bit of presentation that was nice. Nyla was on top for the first half of this match. Jade came back hard, and essentially was a squash match, and this feud is over. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it because it was at least a story that led to somewhere, and it's been executed quickly. So I thought Nyla maybe got a little bit more of a boost through this feud, and I suppose it hasn't hurt Jade in any way, so... But we really need to get to a number with Jade and end this run, because it's not great. Next up, we have Bryan Danielson versus Chris Jericho versus Sammy Guevara versus Claudio Castagnoli for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Some great move-to-move wrestling here. Sammy turned on Chris halfway through, although that was kind of extinguished a little bit afterwards because Chris was interviewed and was like, of course Sammy's going to do that, blah, 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 blah. But at the time it felt big. it felt like, oh, are we going to have a Sammy Guevara, Chris Jericho feud for the Ring of Honor title? And I don't hate that. As much as Sammy Guevara is someone who doesn't particularly interest me, when he turned on Chris here, he got a bit of a face pop. And that might be what we need with Sammy to just get some heat off him, because the go away heat is pretty strong with Sammy. And there was a noticeable difference when he went up against Chris. Brian and Claudio were wrestling each other quite a bit in this match as well. And with the events that were happening later or happened later in the pay-per-view, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Blackpool Combat Club. Claudio, right at the end of the match, Claudio swinging Sammy around. Chris Jericho sort of dove over Sammy to hit the Judas effect and get the win. I found myself halfway through this match. Look, I really enjoyed this match. I would give it 4.25 out of 5 stars. And the reason for that is it told a good story. It was sort of zigzagging all over the place of who you thought might win. All four of these guys are amazing wrestlers. There could be some feuds that spin out of this, which is always a nice sort of, it's the icing on the top of a great match if you can sort of spin some feuds out of it. But I just thought, you know, I mean, obviously I love Bryan Danielson, and I was like, I would like him to win, but I also don't want Danielson with the Ring of Honor title. It feels like it's beneath him a little bit, and I apologize to Ring of Honor fans, you know, for putting down that. But at the moment, like, I mean, if you look at this pay-per-view, it's the third match or fourth match on the card. It's a mid-card title in AEW, and I just don't think Bryan Danielson needs to be at the top of the card. That's all I'm saying. There were moments where I wanted Sammy to win. I wanted Sammy to beat Chris Jericho and take the Ring of Honor title off him as a baby face, which hasn't quite happened yet. So in the end, not putting the belt on Sammy, I don't hate. And Jericho's actually doing a pretty good job with the Ring of Honor title. I like this sort of story of him sort of slowly becoming a great Ring of Honor champion, even though he hates Ring of Honor and blah, 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 blah. I don't hate it. So this match was good. I think probably the right booking decision happened and Chris will carry on. Britt Baker versus Saraya was next. Saraya Knight, really interested. I was obviously really interested to see how Saraya went. I think she looked pretty good, seeing that she was 5 years out of the ring. For me, and I've been really hard on Britt in the last 3 months, and I think this match kind of represents what the problem is. I mean, if she's not a legend now, by the time she retires, Saraya will be a Hall of Fame wrestler, and so she should be. And I just, you know, this match was fine. You know, it's a 3.5, maybe 3.75 star. Let's give it 3.75 stars out of 5 match, right? It wasn't terrible. It kept my attention, but there was no, I paid close attention to the crowd in this match. And, you know, there were pops for Saraya at the natural points, you know, when she came out onto the stage, when she eventually won the match. But during the course of the match, there was just a lull. Not as bad as the lull between when Jade and Nyla Rose were wrestling. But there just wasn't, there's no peaks. It's just a very monotone match when Britt is involved. And I think this is the problem. It was the problem with Thunder Rosa. It's been the problem when she's gone up against Toni Storm. And it's the problem now that she's going up against Saraya, is that you can be the best talker in the world, and you can go out there and talk about how it's my house, my division, and I've carried this division on my back. Even though, you know, Hikaru Shida did the vast majority of carrying during the pandemic era, and Thunder Rosa after that. Like, you know, Britt Baker did greatly improve in a 12-month period, but it has very much leveled out and her character has become very one-dimensional. And I just, something needs to change, whether she goes away and has a break for a little bit or tries to become a babyface, goes out as a heel on her own. I just thought it was a short build-up for the Saraya Britt match. They will probably continue to feud after this, and that's okay. But I just think maybe maybe Saraya can help Britt's in-ring game a little bit because it's pretty one-dimensional. And it, for all the build-up that happens in any sort of Britt Baker feud, once we hit the ring, it's a bit meh. And that's what happened here for me. She was telling a story going after Saraya's neck, but that was to be expected. The vast majority of the match was move for move. Saraya hit two finishing moves to get the win. The highlight of the headline for this match for me is that I think Britt really needs to improve her in-ring game, especially when you sort of, if you put this match up against the four-way match for the Ring of Honor title or the Elite versus Death Triangle match, or even the Jungle Boy Luchasaurus match, there just wasn't, there were no moments in the match that made me gasp or think like, oh, what's going to happen here? It was all by the numbers wrestling and executed well by the numbers, but by the numbers nonetheless. Okay, let's take a quick break here. Here's a quick note from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and do the second half of Full Gear 2022. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is my go-to when betting on the NFL this holiday season. The reason why for me is the easy and fast payouts. You guys know I've been betting on the Bills all season. I'm not going to stop anytime soon. And then when I get those dollar bills, y'all, I can take them out straight away. Right now, new customers, and that's you if you haven't signed up yet, you can bet just $5 on any NFL team, that's the National Football League, to win their game, and you'll get $150 in free bets if they do, right? So you bet $5 on a team. If they win, you get $150. I mean, what do you got to lose? Check this out. Right now, everyone can earn up to 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay and combine multiple bets like which team will win, player props, point totals, and more. The more legs you add, the bigger the boost, the bigger your shot to win big. $150, man. Discuss my own experience with the app, upcoming game, or player that I like. It's the Bills. I'm going to tell you guys in every ad, put all your money on the Bills. For you guys who aren't NFL fans who are here to listen to wrestling talk, man, bet on AEW. WWE, like Survivor Series War Games coming up, you can bet on that as well. And it's pretty easy now that Hunter's the booker. You just book whoever his favorites are and they win. So, Bayley, Dakota Kai, any match that those guys are in, they will be booked to win, so it's easy money. All you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code TPPN. Place a $5 bet on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only use DraftKings Sportsbook with code TPPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Welcome back, guys. Let's get into the second half of Full Gear 2022. Next up was Powerhouse Hobbs versus Wardlow versus Samoa Joe for the Ring of Honor television title. Yeah, this was a really interesting match. Hobbs hurt his elbow, which was a story point. And kept sort of commentators did a really good job pointing that out. Wardlow hit a backflip off the top rope, which was pretty stupendous considering the size of the guy. Wardlow's eventually gets on top. He's hitting a powerbomb symphony on Will Hobbs, and then Samoa Joe hits Wardlow with his belt, his Ring of Honor belt, and chokes out Hobbs and is a double champion. And I did not see this coming at all. I just thought this was a swerve, but a good one. I mean, I feel a little sorry for Wardlow because I don't think he was given a particularly great run as TNT champion, but Samoa Joe, as a big dominant heel in the mid card with two belts, builds him up. And also, I think we will probably have maybe Hobbs go after the Ring of Honor title and Wardlow go after the TNT championship, or vice versa. You know, or we might introduce somebody else into the picture, but this was I saw this described as a series premiere for AEW last night, and I don't mind this storyline at all. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Wardlow fans or big Hobbs fans who are disappointed that Samoa Joe won. But I think it's probably it's a compromise, but a good one. Because you can always put belts back on those guys at a later date. And they need to work out, you know, I think Wardlow's going to be better if he's chasing something and if he's chasing a big monster heel. And Samoa Joe definitely fits that. I enjoyed this match, especially with the booking at the end. I'll give it 4 stars out of 5. I thought it was really good. Next up, we have Sting and Darby Allin versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. Now, I saw a lot of, not necessarily hate, but just a lot of about Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. And I can kind of understand why to a point, you know. I mean, their impact, both heavily associated with Impact, and then Jay Lethal went off to, you know, the Ring of Honor that was kind of dying. So, you know, I do sort of notice that when wrestlers are sort of identified with those kind of promotions, it can sort of leave a bit of a stink on them as far as wrestling fans are concerned. I was super excited about Jeff Jarrett coming in only because I know that he wasn't going to get booked as a champion. He's there to do backstage work for the company. So I didn't mind this. Sting and Darby got a good win. It was a nice little feud that lasted a few weeks. And the match itself was a lot of fun. Sting's jumping off stuff. There was a nice entrance from Darby before that. Darby and Sting managed to put Satnam Singh away, which was stupendous. And it was just a great little match. I had a bit of fun. It's, you know, a mid-card match that maybe a few people would have gone off to get their popcorn and drink while this was on, but you shouldn't have because it was just good fun to watch. I really enjoyed this. So I would give it, if I'm giving the last match 4 stars, I'd probably give this 4 stars out of 5 as well. We're up to the main 3 matches of the night, and I think all of these were really, really good. Tony Storm versus Jamie Hayter. This was a really, really good match. I do have some problems with the way this story was told, though. If you're going to put Jamie Hayter over, that's fine. She's absolutely earned it. She's hot. And, you know, I saw Brian Alvarez speaking this morning in regards to MJF, but it's pertinent. If someone's that hot and is getting a natural reaction from the crowd, go with it. And Jamie Hayter's getting that reaction, kind of the same reaction MJF got in a couple of matches' time. Make her a face. Don't have Britt and Rebel you know, I don't care if Britt and Rebel want to come down and have their moment wearing Jamie Hayter shirts and stuff. Fuck off. I don't think it's the worst booking in the world. I think if you wanted to book it that way, it was done perfectly fine. But there were two moments of interference here. And if you're rocket strapping Jamie to the moon, you're not doing that. If she constantly has to have interference to beat Tony Storm, I understand the counter to that would be, well, it makes Tony look strong because it took three people to beat her. As Tony Storm is a good enough wrestler and over enough with the predominant amount of the audience to be able to take a loss. This is the thing that keeps sort of happening, and both companies do this, but AEW has been doing it a lot recently, and I really dislike it. The interference takes away from whichever way you want to book it. If you're booking a baby face to go over, then it interrupts. It doesn't make them look stronger to me. And if you, especially in this case where Jamie Hayter and Tony Storm were having a great match, and the match itself, look, I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. I thought it was a stupendous match, but I'll take half a star off because the run-ins really left it didn't leave a bit of taste in my mouth, but I didn't want to see it. You could have quite easily have booked Jamie Hayter to win clean against Tony Storm, because Tony Storm can always come back and go, well, that was just an interim world championship anyway. You know, there's other ways to tell that story. And then you can have Britt and Rebel come down afterwards if you really want to, if you have to give Britt more face time. I am at the point now where anything associated with Britt is annoying me. And, you know, this was a reset. It was a reset pay-per-view and a very, very good one. And the comments on all social media outlets tell me that people are over the moon with this pay-per-view, and that's great. That's great. So was I. It's just there are still some weaknesses in the storytelling of, like, everybody was happy with how we got to the winners in these matches, and that's fine. But what happens at the next pay-per-view if people are winning that the fans aren't happy with, and then the storytelling is still weak or has weak spots like this? You know, you can paper over problems by giving people what they want, but I still want to see the as tight as a fish's bum storytelling that was happening in the first year and a half, 2 years of AEW. I suppose my other criticism as well is I think we can just drop interim. You know, if we've got injuries, you know, I know this is probably the wrong time to jump on this bandwagon because everybody is super happy with AEW again and we're back, baby, and all that kind of stuff. But there's still these issues that probably need to be resolved. Interim championships, the word detracts from the importance of the matches. So you've got Jamie and Tony in this huge match. Everyone's excited. They deliver and have a fantastic wrestling match outside of the interference. But it's for the interim women's world championship. You know, even just saying it right now, it detracts from it, right? It's less interesting. So that needs to be dropped as well. But hats off to the girls. These two absolutely should be the faces of the women's division for the next 5 years at least. I really enjoy both of them. I think both of them can do heel and face work. And they're good friends in real life. And it showed in the ring that they have a great chemistry. Next up, we had the Acclaimed versus Swerve and Our Glory for the AEW Tag Championships. This match, again, wrestling-wise, had a lot of good moments. Kind of telling the story of how Anthony Bowens isn't the glass man and could stand up to a whole bunch of punishment in this match to let the Acclaimed retain their titles. It just seemed to me like the whole crowd thought it was a foregone conclusion that the Acclaimed would win. And so we were all kind of waiting for the inevitable breakup between Swerve and Keith Lee, which we did get, and it was good. It just sort of felt like you know, I like the storytelling. I'm glad that those two have been split up and that they can go solo. But Keith kind of helped the Acclaim retain, and that, again, sort of detracts a bit from the Acclaimed being the babyface champions. Like, let them win clean and then have Keith and Swerve break up, you know? I just think him sort of leaving halfway through the match as well, you know, it's good that Keith has finally come to his senses and told Swerve to fuck off. But again, I think you need to segment these things a little bit. Have the match, have them win clean, and then have the storytelling happen. It just, I don't know, it just detracts from, especially when a championship is involved, it detracts from the win a little bit for me. I want to really put it on the record that these are small criticisms, and it's 100,000 times better than it has been on TV the last sort of 2-3 months, but it's still there and needs to be cleaned out. But anyway, the Acclaimed are still tag team champions, and Swerve and Glory have broken up. So ultimately, the things that we wanted to happen have happened, and that's great. It's just, how are we getting there? That's the thing that, like, that still needs to be tweaked to be 100%. And next we got Mox versus MJF. The crowd was with MJF. Mox is trying hard to keep up with MJF in the interplay stakes and probably does a pretty good job in the end of just sort of switching heel at the last minute. The crowd were impatient wanting MJF to win, and Mox was happy to play into that as the heel. Mox hit a pile driver through a table that was brutal for both guys. MJF injured his knee, and that was sold well throughout the match by both guys and the commentators. I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting a little bit sick of the BCC, like UFC elbows and stuff like that. I just don't think it's that big a deal. Yeah, I mean, like, it's fine. You know, it's sort of part of their character, so I get it to a point. But I don't know. I just, any time MMA or UFC sort of crept into pro wrestling, I don't like it. And there's something sort of strange to me about, like, the top babyface faction being like, we like to fight. I mean, it kind of makes sense, but anyway, I don't think we're going to have to worry about that faction maybe ever again, because both the refs got knocked out in this match. And then while that was happening, William Regal throws his knuckle dusters to MJF. MJF uses them on Mox, knocks him out, gets the win, and is the AEW champion. Again, like, you know, I saw Brian Alvarez talking about this morning to Dave Meltzer, and Dave was like, oh, well, you know. But I kind of agree with Brian here, and I'm trying not to be super negative, but I just think, like, based on the reaction that MJF's getting when he comes to the ring, you got to try and see if you can go babyface with him. You know, Meltzer was sort of saying, like, well, you know, that's not what people want from him. They want him to be the devil, and they want him to be a smart ass, and that doesn't lend itself to being a face. But, I mean, The Rock did it, and I think MJF could quite easily do the same thing. But anyway, look, I think the likelihood is that he'll come out on Dynamite on Wednesday with William Regal and be like, you fucking idiots, you thought blah, 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 and this will sort all of this out. But look, at the end of the day, it was a great match, 4.5 stars out of 5. Moxley will probably have a bit of a break now, and I think that's probably good for us as viewers. I mean, he's done an amazing job in trying circumstances. He's always fantastic at pushing the story along and telling great stories in ring and outside of them, and he last night was a really good example of that. That he turned on a dime, like when the crowd reaction was so strongly against him, he turned heel, and I mean that obviously, like, he's an experienced performer, but it takes confidence in your own abilities to just do that and turn on a dime. So be interesting to see if he comes back as a heel or what happens there. But the MJF era has begun, and I'm really excited. I'm really, like, I sort of I think kind of looking back on what I've said about the pay-per-view, I feel like I've been quite negative about it. And I don't want that to be your overall takeaway. That the pay-per-view, I would give 4.75 out of 5. I mean, as high as I could out of 5 without giving it 4 or 5 stars. And I would only do that because there's just those small storytelling problems for me. Like, it does matter how you get to the conclusion, you know? Like, if Superman has acted like a bad guy throughout the, or if he's, you know, let's say Superman's acted like Superman throughout a whole film, but then gets the job done by doing something kind of evil at the end of the movie, that's not, but Superman has won, so great. That's not good storytelling. So, you know, that still needs to be fixed up. But look, the quality of storytelling was 1,000 times better, and I genuinely think that with the Elite back on board, that will sort itself out, because you can't tell me that those guys didn't have a huge hand in what was happening in and out of the ring, because they weren't there for the last 2 months or 3 months, whatever it's been, and the storytelling has been pretty atrocious. So I think having Kenny and the Bucks back on board, we will see the quality of storytelling that we were getting previously. So yeah, look, that's it. Really good show. Really enjoyed it. Looking forward to, I've got a renewed sense of optimism about AEW. Not that I was hating on it. There was still really good stuff. A wealth of talent on the roster. I think Tony needs a soundboard or a sounding board, and I think the Elite give that to him. And immediately, like, you see it with like the seven match series between the Death Triangle and the Elite. Like, that's great. Everybody wants to see that. So give everybody what they want to see. That's more matches between those two teams, and the Elite will eventually, most likely, win the Trios belt, which is also what everybody wants to see, but it doesn't completely bury the Death Triangle. And I don't know if that decision would have been made without the Elite being back on board. So the Elite are back in the, you know, they're back in the helm seat. The crowd are up and about. And I think this was probably an important summer for AEW to see how bad things can get. If you don't nip things in the bud when it comes to egos and but also, you know, Tony sort of stood his ground and made sure that everybody knew that he was the boss, and the product suffered for a couple of months because of it, but the right decision was probably made at the time, and now everybody can move on, and we can start really concentrating on getting the product back up to where it was. And I mean, we've still got House of Black to come back. Most likely Miro. I'm not 100% sure what's happening there. He might just be waiting out his contract to go back to WWE, but we're definitely getting House of Black back, Hangman Page back. And so there's still a lot of talent to come back onto the show that weren't on the pay-per-view last night. We didn't have Orange Cassidy wrestling last night. We didn't have FTR wrestling last night. We didn't have Hangman Page, Aleister Black, or Miro. So a lot of talent. Athena wasn't on the card. So a lot of talent to fit into that pay-per-view as well. And just really, I just really want strong booking to be happening on both shows. Like, you know, no QT Marshall. No, like, you don't need them. You don't need guys like that, because look at how stacked the roster is. I want great feuds between great wrestlers and great teams all the time. And that's what I expect to see over the next 5 months until we get to, I don't know what the next pay-per-view is. Would it be All Out? No, it wouldn't be All Out. It'll be Double or Nothing, right? Anyway, either way. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Really appreciate it. You can help me out by either downloading the DraftKings app and putting in the code TPPN, or you can give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, guys. I'm Damian Gibson. This is Russell Wolf, and I will speak to you next week.